Welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Soma, the Frictional Games science fiction survival horror game that came out in September.
Yeah, September 22nd.
Yes, sir, on PS4 and then all the PC OSs.
Yeah, all the good OSs. Yeah, Soma. So ordinarily we try to do two games for the show. This time we're doing one because Soma is like a big game.
Yep.
And just how it timed out. End of year madness and finding time to play all these games and the like.
Yeah, we decided to we were going to pair it with Beginner's Guide and then decided Langoskov came out as we were planning that. Decided those would be a better pairing. And
totally.
And Soma's got a lot of good stuff to talk about. So
yeah. Yeah. So let's get started with the basics.
Sure.
We mentioned who put it out and when it came out.
Yeah.
Frictional Games, so for people who don't know, are the people who did Amnesia kind of most famously.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, the Penumbra games.
Correct.
And they've developed kind of this engine and also I feel like kind of this philosophy and take on survival horror.
Yeah.
The Penumbra games are the first time that I feel like if they didn't do it necessarily first, there could be something in the history,
sure,
or the annals of history that predate it, but kind of first and best and define this take on it, which is this super, I mean, and there are, I can even, I'm thinking of this, there's all this clock tower, like there's Haunting Ground, but this is kind of the first person take on that, like a puzzle focused, physicality focused survival horror where you can't fight back.
Right. Yeah. It's hopelessness and avoiding rather than kind of fighting your way through scary stuff, which makes it a lot more scary because you don't get to, you don't have any means of protecting yourself.
Yeah. And a lot of people forget this, but that wasn't true in the Penumbra games. In the early Penumbra games, you could fight back, and it did have kind of a negative effect on things. Like, essentially the hack for that, like, there are a couple monsters that are unkillable, but really you just want to get on top of a barrel and let it come at you and smack it in the head until it died. And then later they got rid of that, and then Amnesia kind of perfected it.
Yeah.
So this is something that this game was announced a long time ago. I want to say I heard about this, not necessarily it came out at the same time, but I heard about it around the same time. Or as contemporary with A Machine for Pigs.
Yeah.
Which is, very early Check It Out, Comrade.
Yeah, yeah.
Episode 2.
Anyone who's unfamiliar, that was the Chinese Room's take on Amnesia, using the same engine and a lot of the same kind of assets and such, but was not produced by Frictional. They didn't. They only provided the base work for it. They didn't do any of the writing or design there.
Yeah, and Chinese Room totally missed the point. That's a bad game.
Yeah,
I was super looking forward to Soma.
Yeah,
and like, so this is one of my most anticipated games of the year.
Absolutely.
Up there with Bloodborne, and I really like it.
Yeah, it lived up to the hype for me.
Yeah,
100%.
So there's going to be a significant spoiler section
for sure,
because this is a vaguely twist based game. Maybe not as serious of a twist as the Beginner's Guide, but you want to go into it not knowing what's going on. But let's talk about the basics about how Frictional does this kind of survival horror. So you're still disempowered, like you still cannot fight back.
Right.
It is about avoiding monsters, kind of light stealth and pursuit sections when there's a monster and hiding from them.
Correct.
One of the things that struck me about this that I realized was kind of an override, underlining kind of design philosophy of how Frictional does puzzles is so essentially the engine that they have, this HPL, like Lovecraft, named after Howard Phillips Lovecraft engine, is that your mouse controls your hand. So when you open doors and when you have to pull levers and stuff, you actually have to do it. And that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like that makes such a big difference because, one, like all the puzzles have a sense of physicality to them.
Right.
So there's this huge, huge kinesthetics. Like you pull a lever and it shunk, shunk,
right.
It feels huge. You can almost, there's no haptic feedback unless, obviously unless you're like doing this in a Oculus fuck corridor or something like that.
Right.
But the, it has that sense of, and then you also feel like whenever you're solving something or doing something like this, you feel like you're risking part of yourself.
Yeah.
Like you're reaching into the thing, you're doing the thing. It makes you very body aware,
mm-hmm,
in a way that reminded me of Thief, because we just did that on Macho Fireballs.
Right, right.
And they're also, their puzzles are oftentimes designed around machinery.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the way they did this in Amnesia was it was old-timey machinery.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we don't know how to make it work. And this way they go to the future and it's like future technology and we don't know how to make that work.
Right.
And it's really cool because if you understand the basic logic of how like machines work, or, you know, these things, everything you do is not like just a puzzle floating in space like Myst. They're all like logical things that people would use every day.
Yeah. Mostly like security systems to get into buildings and, you know, kind of
rerouting
like,
power.
Yeah. Rerouting power and things, getting computer systems working or aligning satellites. Like it's all based around the technology, but in interfaces and such that, you know, none of us are aligning satellites, so we're not really familiar with
it. Totally. Like, we're unfamiliar with it, but you get the sense that the people in the world would be. So
exactly.
It's not like Resident Evil, where it's like, oh, like, every single time somebody who lives in this mansion wanted to go to this room, they had to go, like, solve the two tigers, one tigers have blue eyes and some tigers have red eyes puzzle to go into the room with the typewriter and the books in it. Like, that's ridiculous. Everything feels like it adds to everything the game's trying to do for me, that everything... nothing feels unrealistic for being a sci-fi game, you know, and having the outlandish things. It adds a sense of realism to it that's like super important, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's varying levels of that. So, you know, some of them are a little bit more of a reach, like flipping on a bunch of switches and having to avoid the blown fuses and stuff. It's like, okay, that's probably you guys just trying to, you know, fit this puzzle in a technological way, but at least they still tried. Like, there's nothing they gave up on and was just like, well, here's the puzzle.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it is varying degrees. So like, but we don't know how fuses are going to work in the future, bro. Future fuse. That's like the big takeaway from this I got mechanically without spoiling anything was like, I love the sense of like physically doing things that people would actually have to do, but having no context for it.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it could be if you plopped me down in like an aircraft cockpit and just said, like, fly a plane, that could be a puzzle for me.
Yeah, it would be a huge puzzle for you. That would take entirely too much research to attempt to even get the first step down. Exactly. Yeah. So this is definitely that feeling, but brought down a couple of keys to make it playable.
Nothing that complicated.
Right. But no, yeah, it is really cool. Like, when you say, like, trying to fit things into the setting, there's one that has to do with like you can't get into some files because you don't have the decryption key, and so you have to figure out how to get the decryption key, and how you get it is played into the story like as a huge plot line.
Yeah,
but it still all makes a lot of sense. Like, obviously if I don't have the passcode to do this thing, I'm not gonna be able to do what I need to do next.
They advance the story and puzzles at the same time.
Yeah,
a lot of the time, and they intertwine in a really cool way, in a way that I would say is stronger than Amnesia.
Yeah.
Like Amnesia, I love Amnesia, but you know, that just felt like, okay, here's some old timey Steamworks.
Yeah, and it's very much like a, you know, old horror movie castle where there's just a whole bunch of doodads that you don't really know what they do, or this, you know, mysticism kind of, I need to get these, you know, all these potions lined up, and like it's a lot of really hand wavy. This actually tries to make it fit into a real solid technological setting, and everything plays a role in ways that make perfect sense.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And it's also, that kind of plays into another big difference between this. And we're going to keep comparing this to Amnesia because that makes the most sense. But like, Amnesia is an abandoned place. This is not that. Like, it's largely abandoned, but there are other entities at work.
Right.
Here that aren't just like the monster or not just the evil, and that makes a really big difference too. And we'll talk about this, where it kind of detracts a little bit from the horror. Like, this is not as scary a game as Amnesia is one of the scariest games ever made for my money. Like, I find that game, you know, really, really terrifying on a visceral level. But this adds into, so it takes away from that, but they replace it with an existential horror that we'll talk about in the spoiler section.
Yeah, an overarching existential horror. Like, the storyline itself is a scary story, like a scary thought experiment.
Yeah, turned that actually into a game. It's something I'm already scared of.
Oh yeah,
like it's already something that like I'm thinking about. I think about with some regularity.
Yeah, me too. It's this all dives along kind of almost, you know, post-human cyberpunky issues that have been talked about in science fiction, you know, a lot, but are of almost a more modern, recent light in the world, and they just fleshed out a whole story about it and turned it into a really cool game.
And the take they're taking, the angle they're taking, it's important to note, like, if that is a turnoff to you because, you know, maybe you're not big into like sci-fi, is that like, this isn't hard sci-fi. This is the psychedelic sci-fi from the 70s.
Yeah.
This is Philip K. Dick and Harlan Ellison short story sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite sci-fi. Like, just really big idea. Like, I don't really need to know how the things happen. you know, I'm not that interested in that. Like, and a lot of times I'll read hard sci-fi and it's like, I can appreciate the craft that goes in the author, imagining the way something would work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the, I mean, the literal logistics of it.
Right. Like, right, oh, this is theoretically the actual possible. Math behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't want to read about science. You know, yeah. I want to read about, you know, I like the ideas behind it because like the best science fiction, you know, obviously it reflects on things that actually, you know, like human nature, that is timeless and not futuristic at all.
Exactly. You're completely right with the Philip K. Dick comparison, as opposed to the opposite, which would be like an Asimov.
Yeah, it's not that. It is very much like Philip K. Dick and really Harlan Ellison-y.
Yeah.
Like this could be like an ad. I wouldn't be surprised if like, because Harlan Ellison sues everyone. I wouldn't be surprised if he sues Frictional after this, because it probably takes some ideas from a short story of his, because he's prolific and has every single sci-fi idea copyrighted and is a litigious old fuck. So
I mean, yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. We really, in order to talk about really any of the great things about this game, we have to get into a spoiler section.
We can say the setup real quick.
Yeah.
Like the very, like, without saying what the mystery or what is the cause of the mystery.
Yeah. That's like what I was thinking too. Yeah. Give the intro to the plot line and then we'll continue on with it in a spoilery break. So, the setting for Soma, it starts off, you are this gentleman named Simon, who is involved in a car crash in modern day Toronto. And, he has severe brain damage and cranial bleeding that is untreatable with modern science. But there's this experimental treatment that he got in contact with this doctor about, where they do sort of this full image capture of the brain to better examine it and better provide treatment. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get into this office, which is strangely abandoned, and you get to the doctor, who is sitting there kind of in his own room, and he's not actually a doctor; he's a research student himself. Mm-hmm. You agree to it nonetheless, because this is your only known route to any possible future anyway. So you sit down in this chair, and the brain scan begins, and then you wake up, and it's 100 years in the future.
Yep, and you're in an underwater base.
You're in an underwater base. From the first sight, sight of Cillian, you can see that everything's kind of plastered with this Pathos 2 logo, and there's this like obvious kind of living biomechanical goo kind of running amok.
Yep.
And that's pretty much where the first sight stops. And that's, I mean, you're trying to figure out where you're at, what's going on, and how to progress forward in any sort of fashion. And I think, is that probably where a good point to stop?
That's probably it. There's a little bit of a note, you know, your girlfriend died in the crash.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you get the sense that maybe you're going through some kind of emotional... like something that's affected your brain has kind of interfered with your emotions or changed them, because he's very muted,
mm-hmm.
Your main character. So there's something going on. So something to keep in mind. So we're gonna take a break, and then we're going to do the spoiler section. But the very first thing I'm going to say in the spoiler section is the twist that I thought it was, that it's not.
Okay.
So if you just heard that setup and you're like, I know where this is going, that's stupid, listen to the very beginning of the spoiler section where I say that that's not it. And then if that not being it is enough to make you try the game, then stop. Because there's a way this could have went that I thought was stupid, and it didn't.
I had no prediction, so I'm interested to hear where your thought was going.
Okay.
Cool. So quick admin stuff real quick. We have a Patreon running at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And that is our main source of listener contributions that help us keep the show running. Mm-hmm. $2 and above, you can get access to our Slack channels where you can come chat with us. We're in there pretty regularly and enjoy interacting with you guys on that one-to-one connection there. But we're also available on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade and on Twitter at Comrade Podcast.
Yeah, and as this comes out, it's a couple days after the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I hope you guys had a good and safe holiday.
I did too.
You know, that's good job, everybody. Thanks for a good fun year of Comrade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have one more episode that'll be coming out before we. This is the last time we're recording this year. We have one more episode that's coming out, and then we're going to take a break for a little bit. But we're looking forward to coming back, and I want to hear what you guys have to think, and you know, suggestions for new games to cover, suggestions for the show, etc. All those things are welcome. Yeah, and thanks for making it a good comrade year.
Agree. Thanks for keeping us around for another year, and it'll be another fun one next year.
Yeah, indeed.
All right. So spoiler section now. Stop here if you haven't played the game or don't want to hear Gary's guest spoiler. Yes. And then
then there's a second spoiler.
And then there's section. Yeah. Then there's real spoilers. So yeah. Take care.
So I thought it was going to be everything was a weird fantasy metaphor for him dying in the chair.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought that like I really thought like, okay, this is going to be a big metaphorical treatment on what it's like as this procedure goes wrong or in the last moments of his life.
Hmm. See, I thought at first that it was I don't know, some like more cryogenic stasis or something. I thought there was still something more technological to it, which is closer, but yeah, not quite as dreamy.
Yeah. So that's not it.
Not
so if
it.
You were like, it's going to be one of those things. Boo. Then ignore it.
Yeah.
Now,
that's not it at all.
Yeah. Now actual spoiler section.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you kind of discover it later, but just kind of quick continuation.
Yeah. We can kind of talk about the themes and stuff and then move into the individual encounters and the things like that.
Yeah. Okay.
We can say what the game is about, I think.
Sure. So you find out kind of, I guess, midway through the game, you get obvious confirmation. Maybe even sooner than that when you meet Catherine, that you're actually the brain scan that was collected was actually a full kind of brain download of your entire brain state at that time. And that is now common technology, or at least among Pathos 2, something being researched at Pathos 2. And you are now, you've been downloaded into a robot brain, basically connected to a human body by some strange means via this bio goop, basically. Well, I forget what was it called again? Something gel.
Structure gel.
Yeah, structure gel. Structure gel kind of helps piece together technology and living tissue in strange and interesting ways, and undiscovered up until you came to life in this body. It can actually help interface computers. Computer brain downloads with the actual human body.
It can do lots of stuff.
It can do lots of stuff.
It's one of those things. It's the game taking a turn into soft sci-fi.
Yeah.
Where we don't really like it's magical space goo. Like it doesn't matter.
You know, right.
It does what the plot needs it to do, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know the thing like so what it you know if what it's about is having this it's about the singularity.
Right.
Is there anything right now that like we as a species is more scared of? Like
no.
if you think of this idea that like popular culture mirrors, you know, humanity's hopes and fears and the like, you
right.
know, so like when we were all scared of nuclear annihilation, it was all giant monster movies.
Right.
Like it's all like radiation in the desert made giant ants and Godzilla's in Japan and stuff. We are terrified of the singularity.
Yeah. The only thing that would come close is like dramatic climate change.
Yeah,
the heat death of our planet by our own means,
and we see I've seen a little bit of that in like sci-fi stuff, but not I feel like not quite as much.
Yeah,
like that pops up. There's always disaster movies, but the disaster movies, the last couple ones I even remember seeing are really wintry. You know, where like Day After Tomorrow thing with the scene with the you know New York falling to ice and stuff.
Right.
It's like I was even like when you come down to like even comedies and stuff, like you look at like Her. You know, which is about, you know, how do we define humanity when something can be digitized, or like, that movie, The Cloud, which was about not, you know, that's a romantic comedy about a sex tape ending up on the cloud. But this idea of there being like an internet version of reality or like an online kind of digital version of real life and how real that is, is something that we are terrified of on some deep, deep level. And like, it's really interesting to see the media start reflecting it really hard.
Yeah, I mean, well, even starting with The Matrix, which was
of
a different form because your body was still there, your brain was just was just connected to it, but still, like, it's still that sense of like what reality is not reality; it's some digitized form.
And this takes that like a step further to be like, if somebody is, you know, is that even still a person?
Right.
And how can we push that and redefine it and tweak it enough to make you keep asking that question?
Right.
So like when you start off, you're just you, you know, and you see your hands and you think that you're you. And then slowly, like you start to realize like, oh, I'm actually like this machine thing that's attached to a literal dead body.
Yep.
And it's, you know, the question the game's asking is like, are you still a person? Like, are you still you? at this point. And at no point is there any break in continuity for the player. Mm-hmm. You know, the player just played as you in the apartment doing mundane shit. And now you're walking around this thing and there's no difference for you, which is like really important.
Yeah.
You know, so for the people who are going to be inevitably in this situation, like they think they're people.
Yep.
You know, and then like one of the first encounters you run into is with this really pathetic person in the game. They call them mockingbirds.
Right.
And it's people who are stuck in machine bodies.
Yep.
But, you know, because everything you see and feel is just electrical impulses, they don't know this.
Yep.
So you see this pathetic kind of robot man who's obviously distressed and kind of torn apart. And, you know, he thinks he's a person.
He's screaming at you to get a doctor. Not a person. Yeah.
At that point, you don't even know what he's seeing, which is also a machine.
Right.
You know, which is crazy. Like that's, and everyone here thinks they're a person. What is, where do you draw that line?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, if that, so I feel like that's the litmus test of like, whether you think this game is, you know, for you, is if that sounds like something like, oh shit, like I want to watch that get explored in a game space. Like,
right.
That's really cool. Or if you think that's kind of boring and philosophy 101 or like, oh, I'd rather just read like Philip K. Dick stories,
right?
You know, or something like that. But like to me, like when I figure out that's what the story was about, I was just like, oh, this hole was made for me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and well, and that became especially true for me when it takes that to the sort of final conclusion.
Yeah, so the ending is a real gut punch.
The ending is a real gut punch. And they kind of touch on it previous to that too. When you're kind of talking about you had to move to a different body essentially in order to be in this suit that would allow you to dive really, really deep and survive the atmospheric pressures down there. So that required you to basically do the same task again.
Yes.
Having your brain scanned and put into a new chip, which would then be implanted into a new body already dressed in this suit. But when that happens, continuity is switched over for you seamlessly, but there's still a you mm-hmm. in that other body who's just asleep right now, and you're given the choice as to whether or not you let them live on or if you kill them. And they're going to die on their own probably in that base anyway, because you're leaving with all the tools you need to leave. But do you just kill it before it wakes up so it never knows that it lost the coin toss?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for you, there's no change in continuity. So it becomes kind of a plot point that like you accept that as fine. And then later when it becomes a big deal, you're, you know, and we'll talk about that scene. But like, of course you accept that as fine because there was no change for you.
Right.
There's no change for the player.
Of course.
So it's like you would for, you know, so for that, essentially, like if you luck out, there's nothing happens. And that is our normal. You know,
yeah.
That's what we assume is going to be the case all the time. So it just like that idea of what, and it comes into the, so when you find out what's happening to the people on the ship and stuff, where, so they've all, you know, this game is unapologetically complicated, right? Like the,
in good ways though, like it's not ununderstandable, but it's not.
No. It's just, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
So like it's after an apocalypse, the reason why they're in this undersea base is because these meteors hit the Earth and there's no more Earth. And they're kind of trapped on this underwater research station. So that's when they decide to create, you know, to upload themselves to let and fire that out into space.
Yes.
And let humanity.
And the ARC device, which is a full simulated, you know, basically.
Like paradise.
Yeah, paradise. That yep. they want to shoot into space so it can run on solar power for as long as, you know, the sun outlasts.
Yeah.
So they'll download themselves all into the ARC, blast it off into space, which is what this company was doing prior to
yes.
all this. They had yep. a big space gun for launching satellites really cheaply.
Yes.
Along with all these other research.
And maybe like some other life finds it. Maybe, you know, in infinite amount of time, life starts again. And they find it just something to carry on humanity, you know.
Exactly.
People at some point figure out, and it's so clever the way this works, where like, you know, that you're constantly being shown that this is how it works. Because people are finding out or realizing like, oh shit, if I upload a copy of myself onto this thing, there's that person and there's me. And somebody gets in their head that to make that person, like to make your soul jump or to make there only be one of you, you have to kill yourself.
Yeah.
So all the people who have uploaded themselves or copied themselves start killing themselves. You know, and so the game's showing you this. Like the game is like saying, and it's not necessarily portrayed as like as a good thing or anything, you know. It's not shown as like these people are right. They're
yeah.
being treated for depression and they're
absolutely wrong.
Yeah. So But then for them to have you go ahead and do it and make the same mistake, you know, is really, really clever, because it makes you cast empathy on the things you've seen in the past, like for the people you've seen do it before. So like what's the interesting thing too about this being a horror game as well as like an existential horror game is that like they work together really well, I think. Because there are scary parts, like there are legitimately really scary scenes,
right? And in this game, that's quite kind of a you know, separately developed story is about this rogue AI called the WoW, the Warden Unit, that was being developed as, you know, a multi-purpose AI to run the various uses of Pathos 2. Is essentially like what it's sold as at the start. But it has like a singular purpose of saving humanity at this point, which it takes into its own hands. However it determines it should save humanity has somehow led to essentially these creature or humans taken over by the WoW and are now, they chase after you anytime you're anywhere near them, and they send out electrical pulses that fuck up all your senses and knock you out.
Well, so, some of them do. Other ones are just being kept alive to just kind of like slowly die. Yeah. Or not die, just be kept alive forever. Like you run into all these corpses are just like covered in this gel, just breathing. Yeah. You know, and that's what they do. And cause it's a game without weapons, you can't do anything about it. So that stuff is the reason why that's there. Right. Like, so for a little while I wrestled with that. I was like, why are you shoehorning in this sci-fi horror story next to this like big idea sci-fi story? But I think it's so you don't have, it's like playing with the idea of relief, you know, like in Amnesia, like you're really scared of the monster,
right?
And you run away from the monster and eventually you get through a monster scene and now I'm going to solve some puzzles and it's no big deal, you know.
Right.
Here though, you run away, you're scared of the monster and you're feeling that like visceral in your veins fear. And then you go start solving puzzles and reading audio logs and start thinking like, oh, it is like silly for me to be scared of this fictional monster.
Yeah.
It makes sense for me to be really scared of this idea of like, there's a set me and that will cease to exist, you know, no matter what. And how do I define that? And like these kind of bigger questions, terror.
Yeah.
And you ping pong between the two.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly.
Really, really in a way that I think is really well paced, to where it's like it ends up having this sustained level of like tension and misery that I think like works really, is really effective.
Yeah, that's definitely exactly sort of the feeling is, although there's puzzly sections where you kind of don't have to question much, they always put all of the real, you know, philosophical questions in the parts obviously where you're not being chased by a monster. So it's while you're digging for pieces to the puzzle that you're trying to get through that you're also finding audio logs and people who are being kept alive by the WoW and all this terrifying mental horror is just not letting you come down while you're solving these puzzles.
Yeah, it's like two different, you know, instead of thinking of like tension and release as a line, it's like a triangle where you just kind of go back and forth, like a upside down triangle where you just go from the top two sides of it, you know, like just two different kinds of this tension. And it's just like really effective for me.
It was really effective for me too. I have some problems still with the WoW, but we'll get to that a little later on. So as far as the plot goes, you're basically going between all these bases with the help of Catherine, who's the downloaded version of someone who used to work for Pathos 2, who you've now helped her move from one of those Mockingbird bodies into AI chip for this this device that you're using. But they had these devices all along Pathos 2 to let people into doors and stuff. It held all their information to
access. It's an omni sci-fi thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It just does whatever it needs to do.
So her consciousness is your AI. Anytime you're able to hook it up, she's able to kind of help take control of whatever base you're in. And although there's still paths in her way that you need to help her through, she gets to open doors for you and such. But she explains to you about the Ark and she wants to. She's the only person who's woken up from this who's still in a human body that she's aware of, or sorry, not a human body, but it's a huge human consciousness who's still aware of being human, who's aware of the Ark, and she wants to know where it's at and if it got into space, which it didn't, and now wants you to help her get the Ark into space.
Yeah, so the game ends up being kind of moving from place to place and dealing with these setbacks. They're mostly created by the WoW, which is the other kind of gameplay purpose the right. WoW serves, is to add, you know, puzzles and adversity, you know, because otherwise it would just be like it'd just be an essay.
Right.
You know, like it wouldn't be a game. It would just be someone discussing the ideas. Right. So it's to help pacing.
Exactly.
So you just kind of continue to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the sea from these like bases to sub bases,
mm-hmm.
Learning the kind of the story of what happened to the people there, getting unraveled, and then making your way towards this thing. Let's talk about like just on the way there, a couple of encounters before we talk about kind of the big issue with the WoW, which I think is probably going to be my issue with the WoW too.
Yeah.
We'll see if we get there. And I've come to peace with my issue with the WoW. Like I couldn't think of a different way for them to do it, but okay. We might be different issues.
We'll talk about it a bit. Yeah. So yeah, stuff along the way.
I think the first monster is really well designed.
The first monster, yeah, the monster is really good.
The one that looks like a Christmas tree, like
yeah, the bright, bright face.
Yeah, like it looks exactly. It's meant to recall Christmas lights, and I think that's really cool.
You encounter that same sort of monster. Later on in a chase scene in an underground submarine that you're trying to release kind of a rescue sub from. You're trying to steal the mini sub that's attached to this huge submarine to help you get between a couple different places. But when you shut off the power from other parts of the submarine in order to get some to the location you're at, suddenly one of these guys appears and it's a full-on chase scene. If he manages to catch up with you, then you have to start over at the beginning, which is not typical in the rest of this game. The rest of this game, kind of when you get attacked by a monster, it's still really scary. It knocks you, you know, it makes your screen go terrible, your vision gets all fucked up and stays that way until you manage to heal up, but it just knocks you out and then you wake up and you haven't lost any progress really, you just had a terrifying shakeup. So this one is the only one that I ran into that actually resets you, and I had a couple pieces of trouble because if you got stuck on anything and didn't manage to throw anything at the monster behind you, I had to repeat it a few times, which is the only part of the game that I felt really exposed gaming mechanics that I wasn't a fan of.
Yeah, I didn't. That wasn't my thing with them. I read other people had a problem with that encounter as well. I just didn't like. I lucked out the first time running away from him, and just got away from him. So it ended up working out okay, but I can see that being frustrating.
Yeah.
That's always been a amnesia thing though too. Like the water monster during the section where it's chasing you, like if you fall in the water, it can hit you and you start the sequence over too.
That's true.
So I guess I didn't do it, so I don't know how far it sets you back or how frustrating it is.
It wasn't too bad. The main thing is that you're kind of trying to find any route through this sub in order to figure out what you need to do. And all along the way, you've opened up kind of multiple split paths and stuff and made a puzzle for yourself to get back.
Oh, yeah.
And it's long enough and windy enough that I didn't know what my route back was easily.
Yeah, and it's everything kind of looks samey too because it's an underwater base thing. So yeah. There's kind of goo there. Like they probably could have done a better job landmarking.
That's what I think was my only real fault with that. I would have been fine with the chase scene, but it was really early in the game too. It just was, I think, badly paced, not like well laid out.
It's like the second monster encounter, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
After that first one, where it's just like a straight up, just kind of avoid him through a grid.
Right.
I could see that being annoying.
What other cool parts did you like between
I had my biggest and it was saying no sense of exaggeration, like when people play a horror video game and they have like the nope, you know, like I wouldn't do this. The long underwater slog through the storm.
Oh yeah. Oh god. Yeah. Right near the end. That one. Yeah. That's really terrifying.
There's no way. Like it's the dust is kicking up. You're just kind of, and it's like it's perfect. Like you're looking at these hazy lights.
Yeah.
And then you set up. You have this little like guide drone that's a light, and it gets destroyed. So the most memorable part of it, and it's already scary. The whole thing's super scary. And then the most memorable part is your guide drone gets killed, and you see a light off in the distance, and you head towards it, and it's this cave with this phosphorescent fungus.
Yeah.
With non-aggressive spiders.
Or yeah, little crabby things. Yeah.
Yeah, like little crabby things. You're following the cave. You get out of the cave, and there's a light in the distance, and you walk towards it, and then it rushes. It's an anglerfish.
Yeah.
It's like a mutated. It has a face on it. Like I looked up a high res model of it
online. Oh, really? I didn't
it's
get
got,
to see
it's,
it.
It's a, it was a person. Like,
oh shit.
At some point.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Who? Because a person would know to do that.
Yeah.
Like the person knows. Like, oh, this is this area where visibility is nil, and you have to like. So I was just like, oh, you know.
Yeah, that's great.
I couldn't. There's no way. Like, I would have just my heart would have just stopped. Like I feel like I've told this story before on other podcasts, but like I had an old boss of mine who told the story about being on the Florida Keys and swimming out, you know, I don't know, like swimming out for 5-10 minutes.
Sure.
And then kind of being underwater doing swim stuff and then resurfacing and looking back at the coast and there being tons of jellyfish that had like moved in, like the tide had changed.
Just
or something,
like between you and the
between
coast?
Between him and the coast. And I was just like, that would just be it for me. Like,
yeah.
I don't think I would continue. I think I'd just like swallow, like drink salt water until, you know, I drowned and then just sink to the bottom and that'd be it.
That's horrifying. Because
I could not do this like walking in a spacesuit on the bottom of the ocean. Like they're really cleverly, like there are fish that attack you. Like the fish are really aggressive here because of this wow stuff. And they hit you and attack you. So like you're just kind of walking along. At some point you start feeling safe and then you just things and it makes you rush and you don't want to rush because you get the impression that there's just like cliffs on either side.
Right.
It's really good. Like that scene is the best this game has been at being terrifying.
That
I think.
Is definitely, yeah. Or the, like that the viscerally kind of scary. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely the best scene for sure. I completely agree with that. It's super, super good. And, there was a bunch of signs too, all around the area. That's like, there's bad things out here. Stick to the lights.
Yeah.
Avoid
stick
the
to the
lights.
They do. And in retrospect, they foreshadowed it because you go into a research station where they have like they show the different entries for the fish that are around there and they have the angler and it's like, you know, we haven't been able to get close enough to it. It's extremely aggressive, something, you know, and there's not. And I was like, OK, there's like an angler seems like that would make a lot. And it's like right next to a sign that says follow the lights. And it's like if I was smarter, I would have been like, oh, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, but angler's going to trick
it
me.
It tricked me really good.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah.
The other part that I really liked a little bit previous to that was activating the Dunbat, which is the underwater vessel that is capable of diving down into the chasm. You spend a long time in this one station where your singular goal is to get this Dunbat up and running. And it takes a lot of effort to get everything going, and then you finally switch it on, and it has a fucking consciousness and kills itself.
And, it screams and falls into the water. Like it's been mockingbirded or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it like anything could be. Which again, like if you're just describing the idea without seeing how it articulates, I think it can come off as kind of silly. You know, these like other people, they're robots, they're friendly robots. You know, but it ends up being really horrifying.
No, yeah, no,
at least to me.
Oh, absolutely.
And like we get to the ending. So like you eventually, so the big thing I don't like with the WoW is just how it wraps up.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah,
let me do the whole story bit for a second. So you start getting, in the station prior to the last station, basically, you start getting kind of these, visual and audio disruptions from, this AI, but representation of this guy Jonathan Ross, or sorry, Johan Ross.
Yeah.
So that you kind of see his story develop as you're going through. You start finding out that he's this Johan Ross guy, but he's telling you about needing to kill the WoW and how you're going to be able to with this new suit you put together and all this stuff. He follows you down into the chasm, but basically you get the ARC, you pick it up and you kind of send it on its way over to the station where the space gun is, and it just happens to be that your path is blocked, and it just happens to be that your only path out takes you through Station Alpha, which is the source of the WoW, which Johan then tells you how to kill, and gives you the option. So you have the ability to kill the WoW or not. And then if you choose to, then Johan tries to kill you, but gets interrupted.
Yeah. And to be fair, like about the idea of it just being a coincidence, like I think I get the impression that he did that.
Okay.
Like he redirected you because it's like a conspicuous kind of cave in, and then you turn around and he's pointing to a tunnel that's all of a sudden there.
That could be true. So I didn't see him pointing. Yeah. So that could be why I missed that. But yeah, that absolutely could be. But I still have problems. Like why wouldn't you want to kill the WoW?
Yeah, it's set up as a false moral choice.
Yeah.
You know, because the WoW it is keeping these people alive in a way that doesn't look good. It's also like I feel like they needed to have something conventionally scary to contrast with the philosophical stuff, but they also couldn't just leave that thread dangling.
Yeah.
So they just had to have this kind of like action. They had to have a climax to that half of the game as well. And it just like, I realized that's not what the game is interested in. You know, like that wasn't the cool thing about this game was the wow. Like it's perfect. It's serviceable, you know, but it wasn't like it was at that point I was hurrying towards. I was so like filled with the existential shit.
Yeah, exactly.
That I just wasn't that interested in the nuts and bolts, flesh and blood stuff. So like it just felt a little bit like I was being waylaid, you know, like that guy shows up and it's like, well, you know, OK, bud. You know, I'll do whatever you, I'll do the thing you're telling
me
to do.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me too. And like, this is all just like Nick's fanfic, but yeah. Like
Nick's fix.
Yeah, Nick's fix. I would have kind of liked there to have been sort of a choice between destroying the WoW, but not able to send off the Ark, but then you've kind of saved humanity from this AI that's taking over everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or do you save humanity and let the Earth rot to the WoW?
Yeah,
And there was no, the choice wasn't anything like that. Like the WoW didn't, there was no reason to keep them around. You should kill it, like absolutely kill the WoW.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely a false. And the way they would have had to set that up fairly early because I think the idea was that there are no people on the surface, so it's not like the WoW was a threat to anything.
Well, but if they had made it, be like, because he was taking over fish and stuff, so you could have saved the rest of the Earth, or you could save solely humanity, which I thought would have been a cool moral choice.
That would have been cool. You're right. That would have been a better choice. But I think it also would have, kind of also distracted a little bit from like what they wanted to focus on this other thing.
I totally get it. Like, I love the story that it gave me. I'm just saying like the WoW felt shoehorned and they could have done something with it.
Totally. You're 100% right now. That is a better way to have handled the WoW. So when you get to the end, like you get to the space gun, you set it up and you've switched bodies at this point, you know, you've seen everybody do this thing. And you load up the Ark and you're doing the countdown to copy your consciousness onto the Ark as it's about to blast off. And it's like down to the wire and it's like you're not going to make it. And you make it right at the last second and there's a blinding flash and stuff. And then you wake up and you're still there.
Yep.
You know, like the Ark has shot off. And you know, you're talking to Catherine and she's like, yeah, it sucks.
You lost the coin toss,
We lost the coin toss.
And that's so fucking good.
Yeah.
Because she's known the whole time that there isn't actually a coin toss. Like, there's no way you can make a copy of someone's consciousness and then the copy doesn't just become its own consciousness and live on and you continue the same thread. Like, there's no way you get to switch over.
She knew, and also you knew if you were paying attention because the game keeps telling you that, but because you have that non-break-in player control, you're so trained at be like play a single character and play through a single experience in a video game, you know, like there's no point where I was thinking like, oh, like I'm going to change characters.
Right. Yeah. It changes your point of view twice is what you don't get to see as a player is that you've changed.
You switched to those other people. You just don't know that you did.
Right.
So like being stuck there and like your guy freaks out and he's being a huge baby about it. And she's like, hey, I don't know how many times I can explain this to you. Right. And like, she's talking to the player, you know, and like, I can see like, you know, people who, if this didn't work on you and you outsmarted it and it didn't have an emotional impact, like, good for you, you know.
Yeah,
but
also fuck you.
Yeah, like it's, you know, it's fine. Like if you think about it, it's all there. I get that.
Right.
But it was something that made me, because like previous to this, thinking about singularity, I was just like, yeah, fuck it, I don't want to die. Like I'm for singularity. And then this kind of like made it real for me. Like, oh, there's no way I'm getting in that.
Right.
Like the me that's me. Like that's it. You know, like that's not so like the weird, terrible like everything I was scared about singularity before was like, oh, it's going to be like an I have no mouth and I must scream scenario. Like maybe you're just in constant pain, like your pain receptors are on and that's that way for eternity. But I was like, oh, that's worth a gamble, you know. But now it's like there's just nothing, you know, it's nothing there. It's like it's just this altruistic thing. You'd just be doing it to have some part of you abstractly live on and take some comfort in that in the same way like people do when they have kids. And the like, you know, and your guy doesn't take it well in the same way that like I don't think anybody really would, even if they had like rationalized it themselves. I think in the end you would still, well, I now I'm stuck at this rotting hulk at the bottom of the ocean until I run out of batteries,
like, right?
That's hell. And you take it, like Catherine is like, I can't believe you fucking idiot, you can't take this out on me. And you smash the console. And then the last words of the game before the credits, are you going like, Catherine, like, cause this is the one person, the last person on Earth. And because of this frustration, you condemned yourself to being alone.
Yep.
And it's just like, oh, that's a downer ending right there. Like that's rough. There's a postscript, luckily,
Yeah. There's a post credits roll of the two of you. Like, you get to wander through this paradise, coming out of the chair, because every simulation starts with the chair, since that's where you ended the, mm-hmm. the last memory. So you come out of the chair, you wander around perfect paradise, and you get to meet Catherine in a human body. I could have done without the ending, to be honest. Like, that, I could have done without that the other consciousness line. I like it; it's kind of a good reward. But also, I could have been fine with the demise of just, like, it doesn't matter. You don't get to know what happened.
Yeah, you don't get to know.
Yeah,
I like the two things I like about the happy ending part is one, you get to take that survey again.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really nice touch, because you take it abstractly, like you see the survey everyone's taking mm-hmm. after the, and then you actually get to take it. And you know, if you're in there and you had this like downer moment, you had a sense of relief where it's like, no, I feel great.
Yeah.
You know,
when
you
just yeah. answer that's all positive stuff. Yeah. Like yeah. there's, I had a couple. Yeah. And the first time I took it, I was just like, no, this is hell. This is not what I like. This yeah. doesn't and feel it, right. This is it. But then your game experience is exactly the same. So
yeah. Of and course then you actually do it. And it's like, no, this is better than the alternative. And then the other thing is, I like this idea that like what it says about, like what a small difference it is, your reaction to Catherine, where like she's simultaneously like this, you know, your character hates her and you know, smashes her, destroys her mm-hmm. versus like the sense of relief and just like that you have.
Right.
And all it really takes is this really small thing to make that big difference, you know? So is it really the same person, you know, like in general, you know, right. like if that's your reaction, like, you know, these little things make us into different people. Like, we're constantly different people every mm-hmm. decision we make, which is what Torment's about, and like is a really resonant theme for me in general.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The real quick before, because people who listen to this probably listen to Cole talk about this on his on the level. Mm-hmm. And like, Cole likes this game, but thinks that the characters discuss the plot too much or discuss the themes too much. I disagree with Cole about yeah. that. Because it strikes me, it feels true to the source material. Like, this is the kind of thing that, like, you know, it's not like in I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, they don't say, like, it's right in the title.
Right.
You know, like, it, like what the theme of it is. It's not like you have to, it's up to you to figure out, oh, this must be hell to be trapped by a computer. You know, it'd be like Having No Mouth and Must Scream. Like, it's on the title and it's the last word of the thing. Like, sci-fi of this era is not about leaving you to figure out the themes. It's about right. presenting the themes and leaving you to think about them.
Yeah, and I think I could have been fine with it either way. Like, I could have been fine with sort of a, you know, silent protagonist who isn't saying what the character's feeling for him. But that's also how Amnesia is too. Like, the whole all the visual disruptions and stuff and all the game effects that have to do with not being able to fight back and having some negative response to that, you have to disconnect somewhat the character between yourself. Like, you're not playing yeah. you in this game. You're playing a character who has his own feelings and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that the Edward Canby or whatever in that's in Alone in the Dark. Whoever the guy is you're playing in Amnesia, I can't remember the name, is too scared to do anything.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's not you. It's this character who you have some control over, but he's feeling the feelings, not you. So I think without the dialogue that where they're actually discussing how terrifying these feelings are and the philosophy that's going on and into all this horrifying shit, that's should be expected from how the rest of the game sets up the character being distinct from you.
Yeah, yeah. So. And he's, I mean, what he's just it plays into when I was talking about his kind of emotional detachment that I think is probably part of his brain damage.
Right.
I think there's part of that too, where it's like he never sounds that shocked until the end.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably he was kind of moving through this kind of dream, like subliminal state anyway. Right. You know, he never seemed that attached to things. I think he's got some detachment.
Sure.
Yeah. Going on.
I can go for that.
So yeah.
So I mean, I could see these same themes, like the same game somewhat being like silent protagonist and they leave you to feel the feelings of, you know, like being stuck on Earth after your consciousness gets uploaded to the Ark. Like, I could see that being something that you'd want, but I also don't feel like that was how the rest of the game was portrayed. So it would have been weird to cut that all out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. At least, I mean, you know, in Cole, I'm not putting Cole on blast, just saying I disagree with him.
Yeah, I agree. I like the game as it is. I'll go with that too.
Yeah, I think this is Frictional's best thing. I like this more than I like Amnesia.
I agree.
And I love Amnesia, but I like this more.
Well, I'm sure that the setting plays into that a lot for me too. Like, I really like the sci-fi setting more than the whimsical, historical kind of setting of Amnesia. But I think there's a lot of really good quality parts about this game that they dug a lot deeper than they did in Amnesia too. So
yeah, and we didn't even talk about every encounter. Like, if you why you think you might play this and you listen to this anyway and now want to see how it articulates, like there's still lots of little surprises and genuinely good puzzles and stuff too,
right?
That you're gonna see.
They do in general de-emphasize the monsters though, like in overall sense. They're still there, but they play a much smaller role. Like there's one base near the end where it's just like one room has one item you need. All the rest of the whole station is safe, but you have to kind of stealth your way through that room and not get caught. And that's the only room in the whole station. Everything else is completely free of monsters. It's just a puzzle.
Yeah. Again, it's that pacing. They want you to be terrified and then go back to being scared. Yeah. So, I really loved it. It's one of my favorite games I played this year.
Absolutely.
It's super up there. So, you know all the stuff to do. You heard it before the spoiler section.
Yeah.
Thanks for bearing with us on this long discussion.
It was worth it.
Of Soma. And we'll see you in 2 weeks with our season 2 wrap up.
Yep.
Good night, everybody.
Night.